You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
One of Hamlet's most memorable lines is, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." The ability to tell good from bad is one of the cornerstones of human development and something that parents have always tried to teach their children. Recent findings, however, have shown that we are, in fact, born with an innate knowledge of good and bad, and that babies as young as 3 months old can show signs of moral thinking. Paul Bloom is a professor of psychology at Yale University, and he and his wife, Dr. Karen Wynn, run the Infant Cognition Center there. Their article, "The Moral Life of Babies, Can They Really Tell Right from Wrong?" was the cover story of the New York Times Magazine this past Sunday, May 9th, and I'm very pleased that it brings Paul Bloom to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Now, we just received a copy of your latest book, How Pleasure Works, The New Science of Why We Like What We Like. That sounds a little more adult. Is some of the research that we read about in the article also in that book?
Yeah, the book is a little more adult. I spend a bit of time on sex and masochism and other adult pleasures, but it shares with the article an interest in development and trying to figure out how adults work by looking at young children.
Your article was published on Mother's Day. Do the findings of your studies that babies are born with an ability to tell right from wrong affect the role of parents in shaping a baby's moral character?
I often wonder that, and actually, I don't think it does. I think the results are, I'm a big fan of this work, but I don't think it says anything to parents about how they should interact with their babies or their children. If you're happy with how you treat your baby, that's fine. Just keep on doing it. What I think it does, and maybe why it was right to appear on Mother's Day, is it causes you to think about babies and children in a new light, with a bit more respect and admiration for what's going on in their heads.
Your previous book, Descartes' Baby, reminds me that Descartes thought that children enter the world with their brains as blank slates. Jean-Jacques Rousseau defined the baby as a perfect idiot. And hasn't the accepted notion up until now been that we begin life as amoral creatures, at least, if not blank slates?
It has been. A lot of people believe that we start off as natural psychopaths. We start off without any guilt or shame or moral understanding, and everything we have about right and wrong is the result of parenting and ultimately of culture. But I think that that's mistaken. I think that there's a lot of evidence from child development and from other sources suggesting that even early on there's a rich understanding of good and evil, and even rich moral emotions, like the capacity to feel pain at the pain of others, the capacity for sympathy, even righteous anger, very early.
So Freud's idea of the id first and then the ego and then the superego finally allowing us to apply moral notions really would not work, even though we're talking about this sort of thinking as recently as Piaget and Lawrence Kohlberg, aren't we?
That's right. The consensus view in morality for a long time, since Piaget, Freud, and Kohlberg, has been that children start off as amoral, and then morality develops through internalization of the parental code and culture's rules. And that's not entirely wrong. It would be mad to deny that culture and society and parenting play some role in our moral codes. After all, morality differs from place to place, and the morality of an adult is very different from that of a child. But I think that the claim that children start off with nothing has been pretty decisively refuted, both in our lab but also in many other labs.
Well, what got you thinking about that? One would imagine that the older thinking was partly because babies are so difficult to read. They appear completely ignorant and completely helpless.
They are. I mean, you could forgive people for thinking that babies are idiots. They just sit around. They look like bread loaves at a young enough age. They could hardly do anything.
Except cry and poop.
And, you know, it's not a very impressive act. What made this work possible is a series of discoveries about 30, 40 years ago that you could use all sorts of subtle responses on the part of babies to figure out what they're thinking. So in some of our studies of older babies, we use reaching responses, what they choose to reach for. But for the very youngest of babies, for the three-month-olds, we use looking time. So, for instance, we use what a baby looks at as a crude measure of what its preference is.
I was going to ask you to describe some of the experiments where you would look into that.
Well, here was the one that got us started, and this is in collaboration with Karen Wynn and Kylie Hamlin, who's the first author. What we did was we showed six-month-olds a series of one-act morality plays where there's a good character and an evil character. For instance, somebody would be struggling to get up a hill. Then one character would gently nudge it upwards versus another character who would shove it downwards. Then babies would be handed over the two characters, the good one and the bad one, and we would see which one that they would reach for, which one they would prefer to make contact with, which one they would want to bring close to themselves. With older babies...
But let me follow up on that. How do you know that they're not responding to the shape or color of the characters? For example, if one character is yellow and the baby likes yellow, wouldn't he or she reach for that one first?
Exactly, and that's the sort of thing that keeps developmental psychologists up late at night. So when we design the experiments, where we try our best to be exquisitely careful about exactly that sort of worry. So for instance, if for half of the babies, it's the yellow character who's the good guy, that means for the other half, it'll be the yellow character who's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they like yellow, the results would turn to mush.
And did the baby always reach for the helpful character?
Not always. There's always some babies who don't. But the results are very strong. We find a vast majority of babies reach for the helpful character.
Well, is choosing a helpful character to one that over one that hinders really a sign of morality, or simply recognition of the fact that the baby needs to bond with the more supportive person?
It's that sort of question that motivated the follow-up studies we did. So if it's moral, how would you know? And for adults, part of the intuition has to do with reward and punishment. We like to reward the good and punish the bad. So with somewhat older babies, we looked at that question. We saw who they would prefer to reward, and we found they would reward the good guy, and who they'd prefer to punish by taking away something. And there they'd choose to punish the bad guy. Then we did it one step removed. So we had a good guy and a bad guy, as shown in one of these plays. Then we had another character, and one of these characters would reward the good guy and punish the bad guy, and babies would like him. But another character would reward the bad guy and punish the good guy. And babies didn't like him. And this is starting to look more and more like a sense of justice and morality, as adults would see it.
So they were indicating to you that they had an intrinsic desire for justice.
Exactly.
How do you even come up with experiments of this sort? I understand how you might fashion an experiment for a baby rat or a baby bird even, but there must be special challenges with humans.
There are, and I'm lucky to have very ingenious colleagues who manage to work around the challenges. But two challenges immediately. One is that babies can't do much. So for rats, they could run mazes, pigeons could peck at levers, but babies just sit there, and they could move their arms and move their eyes. So you have to just use that. There are also, of course, ethical concerns in what you could show a baby and what you could do with a baby. You know, you can't put a baby in a situation that would shock or harm them or would put them in any peril. And these constrain the sorts of experiments that we do.
Now, the babies are sitting in their parents' laps. Don't they pick up visual clues from their parents?
That's the second thing we worry about. So if one worry is that our results are due to a preference for color or shape or anything like that, a second worry is the ever-present problem of unconscious cueing. So we get around this in two ways. They are on their parents' lap in some of the studies, but the parents have their eyes closed during the choice, so they can't cue the baby in any way. Also, we often have an experimenter holding out something for the baby to choose. When we do that, the experimenter is herself blind to the condition. That is, she's holding out two characters, but she doesn't know which one is the good guy or which one's the bad guy. So even at the unconscious level, there's no way she could cue the baby as to the right answer.
It must have been amazing to watch the results, especially for the three-month-olds. What was your first reaction?
It was extraordinary. I've done a lot of developmental research, and the results in some other studies tend to be subtle, and you need to test a lot of babies to see what's going on. These are the strongest findings I've ever seen. Babies just seem compelled to reach for the good guy, to punish the bad guy, to reward the good guy. And even the three-month-olds show very, very strong findings. When my colleagues, Kylie and Karen, talked about testing three-month-olds, I was dead set against it. I thought it was going to be a waste of time, and I proved to be perfectly wrong. These three-month-olds, through their eye movements, showed pretty much the same pattern as the older kids.
Well, the ability to develop language has been proven to be hardwired. Are you suggesting that a sense of morality is also hardwired?
Yes. I think just as in there's a language instinct or language faculty, there's a moral instinct and a moral faculty. And I think the analogy actually runs pretty deep. This is something that psychologists like Mark Hauser have argued. One way the analogy works is that there's an innate language capacity, but languages differ. English is different from French, which is different from Chinese, and these differences have to be learned. Similarly, in morality, I think there's a core moral sense, but then there's a huge amount of variation across culture. There's variation in what you think about as a morally valuable being. Do you value fetuses? Do you value non-human animals? There's different intuitions about just punishment. There's different intuitions about what counts as a social infraction. And all of that has to be learned.
Do you notice a steady progression in morality in the babies as they get older?
In the babies we look at, not really. In the babies we look at, given these sort of very rudimentary, very basic foundational moral notions, we don't really find, we find, as best we can tell, pretty much everything is there from the get-go. With just one exception, there's one thing the three-month-olds can't do. For the older babies, they could distinguish the good guy from the bad guy, and also the good guy from a neutral guy, suggesting they're sensitive to the goodness of the act in isolation. And they could distinguish a bad guy from a neutral guy. The three-month-olds are sensitive to the bad guy, but they don't seem to notice the good guy is doing anything different. And what this suggests, and we need to do follow-up work to try to chase this down, is that a sensitivity to badness emerges earlier than a sensitivity to goodness.
Because that would be a threat to the child.
You would imagine there's, in general, evidence for a negativity bias, which is that types of things in the world that are negative or dangerous or threatening, we're super sensitive to them, more so than to good things. Because the cost of missing out on a good character, it's a cost, but it's not so severe. But the cost of missing out on something malevolent or dangerous could be very, very serious.
My guest is Paul Bloom, professor of psychology at Yale University, the author of Descartes' Baby, How the Science of Child Development Explains What Makes Us Human. He has a new book out called How Pleasure Works, The New Science of What We Like, Why We Like What We Like. It's from Norton, and it's going to be released next month. But a lot of people were fascinated by the cover story that he wrote for the New York Times Magazine last week called The Moral Life of Babies, and that's basically what we're talking about right now, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Later on in the show, we'll take a look at how the personalities of Sitting Bull and General Custer shaped the Battle of Little Bighorn. We'll also talk with Tony Award winner Viola Davis about starring in the hit Broadway revival of August Wilson's Fences. She's co-starring with Denzel Washington. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're back with Paul Bloom of Yale University. His article, The Moral Life of Babies, Can Infants and Toddlers Really Tell Right from Wrong?, was the cover story in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Where do these babies come from?
They come from the New Haven community. They're volunteers, or at least their parents are volunteers. And people from all around the community bring them in.
So we're talking about the children of middle-class parents on the whole, I would assume, because you're probably drawing mostly from the Yale University community.
We do draw a lot from the Yale University community, but New Haven is a very diverse economic and ethnically place to live. And we get people from all around. The one exception, which I'm often asked about, is to some extent this is we're doing a science of the healthy baby whose parents love them. Mm-hmm. So we probably are not getting children who are abused or who are raised in terrible circumstances.
That was my next question. Yeah. What would happen if you used it for these experiments, somebody from a Romanian orphanage or somebody who had been abused as a child?
We don't know. It's possible that they would not do well because they lack the moral sense that we're looking for. It's also possible that they possess the moral sense, but they lack the sort of attentional capacities or interest or motivation to participate in our studies.
Well, more and more we discover that in the nature versus nurture debate, nature plays a very powerful role, a lot more powerful role than we ever imagined.
I think that's the moral of a lot of this work. It's not to say that this would emerge if children had no social exposure at all. it seems likely that some sort of interaction is necessary to get these capacities up and running. But at the same time, I think the fact that they emerge so early and are so powerful and babies are reacting to such unfamiliar situations suggests that a lot of this knowledge is wired in their brains from the very start.
But anyone who has spent time around a baby is struck by the sheer randomness of their behavior. Certainly their reactions, they're mercurial, and their whole personality can depend on whether they've eaten well, napped well, have a clean diaper. So, and these are all factors that I hope you took into consideration when you were fashioning these experiments.
In all these experiments, including ones involving other capacities on the part of babies, those are issues. I mean, sometimes babies will fall asleep in the middle of the study, or they'll be too agitated to even participate. So we do lose some babies, not many, but we lose some babies who come in and they just can't do the study. But once they're sitting down there, we collect data from them, and the surprising thing is they love this. The parents enjoy this. The parents get to see the plays and hear about what we're up to. But the babies get a kick out of it. These are interesting characters doing interesting things. And I think babies just like morality plays.
Would you say, then, that all human beings are born with an innate ability to tell right and wrong, good and bad, fair and unfair, but that we don't always choose to act accordingly? Because I suspect these babies, like many others, will become 2 and 3 year olds who will snatch a toy from another kid, hit another kid?
Yep. We're looking at moral appreciation, moral understanding, not moral action, and not morality in terms of what you choose to do. So some of these babies, I think these babies, like adults, like children, like everybody, can do evil and can do good. And the fact you could recognize right and wrong doesn't mean you'll always choose to do the right thing.
Does this totally supersede Freud's concept of the id, that we start off just wanting and then we learn how to get and then we develop that sense of morality with the superego?
I think it's inconsistent with Freud's developmental story. Freud, like you said, says we start off as this, you know, this blindly hungering animal, this id. And only much later do we develop a conscious sense of self. And then after that do we develop sort of an understanding of guilt and shame as a result of our experience with our parents. And I think that that developmental story is probably mistaken. I think an understanding of guilt, say the experience of guilt, the experience of righteous anger, is part of what it is to be human and doesn't require any sort of social learning or experience with adults.
What about the idea that babies may recognize good behavior in a third party but not necessarily be predisposed to act that way themselves?
Well, with babies younger than if 6-month-olds and 3-month-olds, we don't know the answer to that. It's a great question, and because these babies can do so little, we can't ask the question ourselves. But when you get the kids around their first birthday, you do see all these wonderful signs of what you could call altruistic or kind action. So we know that babies will often voluntarily, without any reward or prompting, help others. If they see another baby crying, they might reach over to soothe it. They might hand over a bottle or a toy. There's some lovely work done at Harvard with Felix Varnik and Michael Tomasello, where they put these toddlers in situations where an adult is in trouble. And what you find is that the babies and the toddlers will often rush over to help the adult spontaneously. So as soon as they're behaviorally competent enough so that they can help, they can seek to sort of make other people's lives better, make their suffering go away, they seem to want to do that.
Have similar things been seen in chimpanzees and other of the higher primates?
Yes, but it differs according to which primate you're asking about. I think the chimpanzees actually do show acts of spontaneous helping and spontaneous kindness, but monkeys apparently don't. And so, and there's a lot of work in the primate literature, both observational and experimental, where they try to answer that question. And it's very much of a matter of debate, but I think the answer is going to turn out to be some primates do and some don't.
A listener wants to know if there is such a thing as an evil baby. would Hitler have been a bad baby?
It's an interesting question. Like I said, we get very strong results, but we never get 100% results. There are always babies who choose the bad guy. There are always babies who choose to reward the bad guy and punish the good guy.
It'd be interesting to see how their lives turn out 20 or 30 years from now.
It would. would. I mean, I tend to be cautious. There's all sorts of reasons why a baby might fail in this task. They might not be paying attention. They may be mischievous. They may fall asleep at the wrong part. But it's also possible that there's a distinction between the babies who have this moral sense and those who don't. I'd be very, very reluctant to say that this is a test for psychopathy. But at the same time, we know humans vary in their moral propensities, and it wouldn't be surprising if some really sensitive measure of babies might be able to pick it up and tell you how they're likely to turn out later on.
I wonder about intelligence in this regard.
Well, there's, again, one should be very skeptical about how well these sort of, in essence, very crude tests can tell you about baby intelligence and baby sociality. Just because there's so much variation and it's so hard to tell. But at the same time, in the extremes, you might find manifestations of later problems showing up in babies. So, for instance, one line of research that's being done at the Infant Lab in collaboration with the Yale Child Study Center is studying children who are at risk for autism, where autism is a developmental disorder that involves all sorts of social problems. And we're very interested in seeing how these children do on these sorts of tasks that we've done with the normally developing kids.
Well, many people think that it has to do something, that mirror neurons play a role in the development of autism, and that has to do with modeling. But you're talking about something that has nothing to do with modeling here.
I am. I think the mirror neuron work is fascinating, but I think there's a lot of the problems of autism and the capacities of normally developing children that can't be explained in terms of mirror neurons. So these capacities we find in 3-month-olds and 6-month-olds, for instance, like you say, have nothing at all to do with modeling and imitation, but they show up quite early and quite robustly.
My guest is Paul Bloom, a professor of psychology at Yale University and author of an article that appeared in last Sunday's Times, The Moral Life of Babies. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The piece in the Times really struck a nerve with readers. There were 7 pages of online comments, and it seems that everyone has an anecdote that either supports or refutes your findings.
Yes, I read all of them. It was a humbling experience.
But did you have any idea that your article would provoke such strong responses?
I actually didn't. I was surprised and gratified by the level of interest. But it seems on the one hand, you know, people like babies. But on the other hand, the question of morality and how much of it's hardwired and how much of it's learned is something that anyone could, I think everybody's interested in.
And we also have to wonder whether being a sociopath or a psychopath is hardwired as well, or if that's something that develops later.
It is definitely an ongoing question. I mean, my bet is that it's a combination of the two, that there's some genetic predisposition towards psychopathy, but that early environment also plays a role. And that would make it like many things in life, like, you know, obesity and all sorts of things, where alcoholism, where there's some degree of genetic predisposition, but then environment fills in the other half.
I'm getting the sense that you are discovering things, but you're not ready to talk about any application.
I am not ready to talk about any application, and I might never be ready to talk about any application. I think I'm very excited by this work, by what it tells us about human nature, but I think we should be very cautious before taking these sort of developmental results and saying we should do this and we should do that.
I mean, you're not going to tell parents this might be a better approach because your child has a certain predisposition?
No, and I'm also not going to market any products designed to, you know, create your better moral baby.
Well, there was a mother in the video showing some of your puppet shows who says she wanted to be part of the experiments to help her become a better parent.
Yeah, it's I think the benefit it has to parents isn't so much to make them a better parent, but maybe just to make them enjoy their child more. I have two babies who I have two children who were once babies and were the subject of many of these experiments.
Your children were once babies?
They definitely were. They definitely were. Makes them unusual as children. Now they're 11 and 14, way past the baby stage, and studying them was really interesting. Seeing what they could do and what they knew was you know, as I said, exhilarating.
Well, we're getting responses similar to the ones that were sent into the Times. Nikita in Teaneck, New Jersey writes, I had a brother with severe brain damage and paralysis from the beginning of his life. He died when he was 13. I remember we used to watch a show on TV with scenes described as unethical situations, and my brother would cry to complain. On the other hand, the scenes for happy occasions, he smiled. My observation is not scientific, but it seems that morality is, as you say, hardwired.
That's a moving story. And that story reminds me of something that, one direction our research is going, which is I've talked so far about eye movements and where children reach, but another way to look at how they understand different situations is to look at their faces, to look at their emotional reactions. So we haven't done this systematically, but if you just watch a baby who's watching one of these morality plays, you could tell it's not a matter of cold-blooded calculation or evaluation. They light up when they see the good guy. They smile at him. They kind of frown and glare at the bad guy. I began my article with a story of somebody of a baby who was in a situation where they saw a bad guy, and they reached over and smacked him in the head. And, you know, these sort of these are real emotional responses. And I don't think you're the person who wrote in. I think it's perfectly good science to point out a relevant observation, which is there are emotional reactions to these moral scenes.
So have you proven your point, or are there more experiments to follow?
Oh, there's a world of experiments to follow. I mean, for one thing, I've argued that there's some degree of moral understanding early on. But the question is, what's the extent of it? To what extent do children have intuitions about fairness? How deep does their understanding of justice go? I mean, one thing which is interesting is that in many ways, baby morality is far deficient relative to adult morality. For one thing, it's very insular. Babies apparently seem to have a strong preference for their own kind, their own color, their own family, those who share their preferences. And while adults have the same sort of moral prejudice, we can transcend it. We could have principles of morality and justice that extend to all people. And it's just very interesting at what point this sort of deeper moral knowledge kicks in.
Paul Bloom is the author of an article that appeared, it was the cover story, in fact, in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine, The Moral Life of Babies. He has a new book coming out called How Pleasure Works, The New Science of Why We Like What We Like. It's published by Norton. And I hope that we can talk about that book when it is officially published.
I'd love to.
And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thanks so much for having me.